State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is joining us on a Wednesday for a change. Tacky, how are you?
Hey Joe, good to see you. We had some scheduling issues the last this week regarding Tuesday and Thursday, so we're running a midweek show together.
Yeah, and just a week from today is July.
It is. You blink. We're into July. Obviously, the formal sessions end on July 31, but we do have a caveat in the rules this cycle that allows us to come back into formal session specifically to vote on conference committee reports. Obviously, a lot of us in the building are hoping that the House and Senate leadership teams on the conference committees are able to complete the work by July 31st, as opposed to an unpredictable return. The rules say that you can vote. You can vote on a conference report 24 hours after the report is filed. So let's say you filed a report at 3 p.m. It cannot be voted on to the next day till 3 p.m. If you file at 7 p.m., you cannot be voted the next day until 7 p.m. So this becomes a interesting situation going after July 31st. There's the potential that the entire legislative body may be on call with almost no notice.
Ah, that could really ruin some vacation plans for folks, I'm sure.
Yeah, it can ruin anybody's plans, actually.
Right.
This is one of the things that we did during COVID, but again, no one could go anywhere during COVID. So going back a little bit in time, before my time, those folks that worked in the legislature prior to 1995 used to live in one-year session cycles where people actually were in the State House right up to New Year's Eve in some cases in formal sessions. The two-year cycle process with clear demarcations of formal sessions created some more predictability for everyone and keeps leadership from trying to spring things on you, so to speak.
Right.
Which created a bit of more ease for everybody and also create a situation where we can't utilize the legislature for the purposes of local campaigns by passing sudden appropriation bills very close to election day for certain members to look like they're doing really good on acquisition of earmarks. So there's a lot of reasons why rules reform in 1994 that took effect in 95, not necessarily just for campaigns, but also prevent some shenanigans that could occur in formal session that could disadvantage an individual in a primary or a final campaign, but also create a lot of predictability in the schedule, where in the past it was just one-year cycles and no predictability in the schedule. But back then you accepted that there was the fact that at least you would notify of formals. Now with the conference committee reports, while it says it can be voted after 24 hours of review, and it's an up and down vote, you can't amend it, you can't change it, it's
Okay.
a yes or no. People could be recalled inside of 24 hours. So obviously, as you may imagine, if you're in my position, you're probably thinking, let's get this done by July 31st, because if I don't know when we're coming back in, it makes it very difficult to plan your time right into the holidays, because in theory they could call it back like December like 24th or 23rd.
Right. And I guess the major matter at hand is the budget, right?
Yeah, we were on call this week, so to speak, on the potential formal sessions. When they say potential formal, it generally means you're on call. And we've been informed there's an informal session tomorrow. So the budget is not ready out of conference committee because we're trying to anticipate that as well as the economic development bill. My staff and I have been trying to work out the calendar projections based on when hearings are. So, for example, in the case of the economic development bill, there's a hearing scheduled by the Joint Committee on Bonding on July 2nd. Which means they could release the bill sometime early next week and send to Ways and Means. Ways and Means will do what Ways and Means wants with the bill, and we could find ourselves in debate the following week. Theoretically, we probably go to debate this time next week, but given the July 4th holiday, perhaps not. So, we're now projecting out internally in my own staff, perhaps the second week. The third, technically the first full week of July.
Right. Yeah, 4th of July is on a Saturday this year, so it's kind of messing things up.
Observances on Friday.
Right.
So we're trying to, again, one of the things that people at home don't realize is not like you get a calendar here and then you tell you what you're doing. A big part of this business is trying to figure out what the calendar potentially may look like based on your knowledge of legislative process and the rules.
Yeah. The Senate and House versions of the budget were very similar this year, though, so what's the holdup?
I'm not sure what it is. The Senate tends to put more public policy in the back of a Senate appropriation. The House has done very little public policy in the backside, and they generally gums up everything because the Senate's trying to push their initiative. When I worked in the Senate as a staffer, we always remind folks that even though joint committees weighed against the senators on a committee vote, there's always the state budget to be the equalizer to try to push Senate public policy and Senate bills. So whether they negotiate to remove it from the budget conference committee and instead the House would take up the bill on the floor later on, or they try to address it right in there in the conference committee regarding these policy matters. So
I see.
it's a type of leverage.
Okay, I see. Yeah, I know the Senate's wor still working on their version of the energy bill. Is that right?
They're running really late.
Yeah.
I'm actually very surprised, given the fact the energy bill was completed in the House in February, and the
Right.
Senate has had ample time to review the House proposal, as well as working on their proposal last year. It's going to be very curious where they want to go with this, because they also have to consider the governor's initiatives. For example, the governor wants to utilize certain funds to provide temporary rate relief on gas prices for consumers. The governor's looking to try to rein in some of the other programs. And greater accountability. And there's also a question of public policy because as the Trump administration moving target energy policy right now, the Senate's probably trying to figure out where they want to be regarding things like renewable power in particular. So I'm not sure where the Senate is coming on this one right now. They've had a very long time period to make a decision because it's not just when the House passed our bill. They had been looking at this issue back in 2025. As part of the committee process. So I honestly can't speak to what's happening because I'm actually very surprised. I thought they would debate this in March.
Right, yeah, exactly. Speaking of renewable energy, I don't think the governor today is at an event marking the completion of Vineyard Wind.
As you may remember, the Trump administration kept messing around with not just wind and solar subsidies, but also the lease agreements because deep water is federal water. And federal water, we need a lease agreement for the federal government to put up these windmills. So as you can imagine, it's a bit of a complicated process in permitting with the federal government, as well as these long-term lease agreements that make sense financially for the wind farms, because you can't make enough money to pay the rent, then you got a problem, right?
Right.
It's good to see the first sets up. Obviously, you're going to need like 100 plus windmills eventually over the course of a decade.
Right. We should, yeah, it's just phase one, we should say. Right. Yeah.
Just yeah, and the interconnector down at Brayton Point and other locations where gas-fired oil generating power plants are no longer in use, those are transmission connections for the wind, which means ginormous cables coming out of the water onto land to get to these connection points to get to the power grid. And it should create a lot of stability in the Cape and the South Coast over a long period of time. So the more you put up, the more stability it creates. Be mindful though, wind is not a consistent resource. It can be anywhere up to 60% reliability, but it's still important because it reduces our need in fossil fuels. And I consider it kind of a part of a mixture of energy that you're using when you turn on your lights.
Right, no, exactly. Yeah, it's just a piece of the puzzle, right? It's not a end all be all, but it's part of it.
That's correct.
Yeah. Hey, I read this morning that the rent control initiative will not be on this year's ballot.
Yeah, it can generate a very interesting question regarding religious exemption. So the rent control issue actually did not include property owned by religious organizations on rent control. And it runs kind of afoul because it doesn't treat everybody the same. And you're prohibited by law, I think, and also by constitution, but I know it definitely by law, from addressing religious issues by ballot question.
Yes, the state constitution, as according to the Supreme Court, specifically says you cannot address religious institutions via ballot questions.
Yeah, so these guys get paid a lot of money to do this, people. Seriously,
Oh, I know.
the public does not understand that people who put these questions spend a lot of money for people to write these
Oh,
questions,
yes, multi-millions, multi-millions of dollars, yes.
and it just went down the toilet.
That's right. Yes, it did. This
Plus,
year, at least, yeah.
and many of these groups pay for signatures, $1, maybe $2, maybe more per signature for these signature collectors. And you can rack up, $500,000 before you blink on just signature collection.
Yep.
So people kind of have this false impression that these citizen initiatives are like people private citizens doing this on their free time. Yes, there are some.
Well, more at the local level, but yeah.
Yeah, there are some, they do exist, but the super majority of them now these days are professional ballot question people. They hire consultants, they hire PR firms,
Yeah.
they pay for people to get signatures, they do polling, and
It's
they
an
spend,
industry. It's its own industry. Yeah.
it's an industry, and
Yeah.
people spend a lot of money for people to write ballot questions.
Yes.
This is very disturbing from my standpoint, is that I whether I like it or not, or you like it a lot, is professionalized ballot initiatives. It is not a citizen petition. It
Right.
is a professionalized industrial machine on ballot questions in
Right. No,
Massachusetts.
and the House Speaker has cautioned about this in the past. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've been living on ballot questions for 30 years of my life, observing in every single one of them,
Yeah.
and the progress of industrialization of ballot questions. And yeah, I am just absolutely shocked about this, as well as the income tax one. Not like I want, like I want to. I'm not going to want to talk about the policy about it because it's relevant now. However, I am shocked at the amount of money these folks have spent and basically just wasted this quickly.
That's right. Yeah.
And I would absolutely want a refund from those guys that wrote those ballot questions.
I'm sure there's fine print that precludes that from happening.
Oh, guys, if you were spending this much money, and whoever wrote this thing for you, I mean, if you look, guys, if you guys spent this kind of money on this stuff, and you just got, hosed by the Supreme Court because of a technical error, of
Right.
which was 100% catchable.
Yes. Doesn't look good for the Attorney General's office either.
No, there's another half of this. Just like we talked about the income tax issue, the Supreme Court basically again slapped the Attorney General for inaccuracy of summary of a ballot question initiative. That, to be honest with you, if you were a competent attorney, should have easily caught in both instances.
Yeah, if you just refer to the state constitution, which has been around a little while.
Well, if I was the AG, first time out, I'd have been like upset. This time out, I'm firing people.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Whether she does or not, that's her prerogative.
Well,
But
that's up to her, right? Exactly.
I
Yeah.
mean, personally speaking, I mean, I yeah, you're canned.
Yep.
One was bad. Two, you're gone.
That's right. Yep. So I think we're down to 10 now this fall ballot
I
questions.
don't know. We'll see
Yeah,
what
I
the
know.
Supreme
It's
Court
hard to keep
does.
track. I know.
Clearly, all the money in the world doesn't help you put up a good ballot question forward.
Well, the one that would get rid of recreational marijuana passed. That will be on the ballot.
I don't think it's going to pass in the public.
I agree, but it will be there, yeah.
Yeah, and I believe the rescinding gun licensing laws has made it to the ballot as
I think
well.
you're right about that, yeah.
I'm doubtful the public's going to go for that one as well.
Right.
But you never know. Like I said, I predicted ballot questions incorrectly in the past, including things like expansion of the bottle bill, which I was 100% wrong on my projections of that one. So
Right.
don't rely on me 100% regarding ballot question outcomes.
Yeah, well, you like you say, you don't know. It's up in the air. Yeah.
It is, and we'll see if some of these groups that are less well funded, see how they move up forward on the advertising and education campaign on voters to push it forward on the ballot box. We shall see. And again, money isn't everything, but in terms of the ballot initiative process, some of these groups, I wouldn't say all of them, but some of these groups spent big money and got blown out of the water because of bad drafting, which I'm sure they spent good money on.
Sure.
And yeah, I want my refund if I was these guys.
No, for sure. Yeah, that's another story. Somebody else to look into.
Hey, these are supposed to be professionals, and I can be critical as much as I want to be, but
So, and
I.
they're in business all around the country, not just here, so it's going to impact their business all around the country.
Well, I think all of us listening to this wish they could make the amount of money some of these guys are probably making.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Okay, well, that on that happy note, let's move on to national politics. What's going on with the US and Iran situation? We don't really know.
No, it's a lot of conflicting information. Again, like through this entire process, the president says one thing, Iran denies the other. And now the Gulf states are kind of like moving on their own here to try to find their own way out of the situation. In fact, Oman and Iran are talking about controlling that entire strait area is actually pretty fascinating for two groups that really don't talk to each other that much.
Right. But they have a common interest. Yeah.
They discovered a common interest because of, frankly, the failure of this president and administration to create security for the Gulf neighbors. It is shocking that you have a dozen or so service men and women die and injured, and thousands of people either injured or killed over the potential on Iran getting unfreeze funds to the tune of perhaps $24 billion. This, the federal government's frozen. And allowing nuclear inspectors back in and promised not to create a nuclear weapon, which sounds creepily like the Obama deal.
Almost identical, actually, yeah.
Yeah, except more money.
Except more money, that's right.
So I'm sure the president will spin as the greatest deal ever seen in the history of the world. But I mean, you have to look at this through a historical lens compared to the past engagements of Iran. And I'm actually extremely troubled, and not, and both sides of the aisle in DC are very troubled that you're going to be moving into a situation where you got a deal that is, by numbers, perhaps equivalent or even worse than the Obama deal, which he criticized. And it also revealed a few things in this war, which is actually pretty troubling if you're into national security. The first is that the Strait of Hormuz was closed for the first time ever by Iran. In the past, Iran was really itself not clear if it could would have the capacity to close it, and it's proven now it can't. After being bombarded and actually decimated by U.S. bombing, it had sufficient capacity to cause fear and terror of people trying to get through the Strait of Hormuz. This is something they've never done before. This is their first try at this, and they were very successful. So that's disturbing.
There was some miscalculation about their military strength, particularly with the drone situation, I think.
Agreed. This warfare behavior is more reminiscent of a Cold War approach versus the 21st century approach. Ukraine was the lesson that they did not learn, or this administration did not learn, of asymmetrical warfare. And we've not been really a great occupying military. We've done it more than once in the 20th century, many times in the 20 and 21st century.
Well, Iraq and Afghanistan, just to point to a couple, yeah.
Well, people forgot we occupied Japan for a long time,
That's right.
and then we basically occupied Korea too
That's right. Yep.
after the Korean War and a number of other places. So it's not like we haven't done this before, but we're not great at it. And the other things have shown that there's a huge military weakness here in the United States that was revealed that we should never have revealed regarding our ability of asymmetrical warfare and our lack of desire to put troops in the ground. I mean, the Iranians have basically called the president's bump regarding his every single bluff regarding land invasion, bluffed him on taking that Kargag oil connection facility, bluffed him on the missile ballistic mission issue. Even U.S. military intelligence think they only got 60% of the missile units because Iranian shows they can go asymmetry. They went from a centralized command unit to smaller units around the country, moving their ballistic missiles and military capacity all over the place to try to keep them U.S. guessing on where they were to keep the munitions alive. And the Republican Guard is completely intact, and the military is intact. So the ground forces in Iran has not been touched
Right.
for intended purposes. I mean, the U.S. Air Force dwarfs pretty much almost everybody. The closest comparable air force is the Chinese at this point in terms of air power, and we still just crush it on the water on our naval ability. But we it doesn't mean anything on a country that's a land-based defense system. They're
Right.
designed against invasion because the last time they project power was truly against Iraq. And that was like a disaster for both countries
Right.
during the 80s. Completely disastrous war. If you look at the map, I mean, you can see the problem of the Iraqi-Iran war. It was a total disaster for both countries. So, and then they also burned through munition stockpiles like mad. And a Patriot defense missile can take up to 18 months to construct. Maybe less time if they put the gun on, so to speak, and just really just crank it up, at Raytheon. So, they're blowing through something, what, $35 plus billion? in munitions alone, I think.
Yeah.
I'm
Well, there's
stupid.
a request on Capitol Hill for $80 billion just for the war right now.
Yeah, so okay, it's not 35, it's 80 billion plus. And that doesn't even consider munitions restock.
Right.
So you got a lot of going on, plus you burn a lot of fuel moving these ships around, the planes around.
Yep. Yep.
And then you redeploy from places that you were actually policing, like shipping lanes that are valuable to the United States and piracy.
Yeah, and the issue between Israel and Hezbollah didn't get touched at all.
No, it's actually interesting. Depends. You look at the analysts, it's really about whose side you want to talk about in the Israel is Hezbollah situation, because Israel is creating a buffer zone in Lebanon. It's so obvious. I mean, it's not like you can argue it. They're basically taking southern Lebanon to create a greater buffer zone for security purposes to keep Hezbollah away from Israel. Makes
Right.
sense, right? You guys probably, this is common sense. The problem is that it's not your land and they
Yeah.
want to hold on to it. So, the Israelis are acting as like they already own it. So any incursion by Hezbollah into the buffer zone land, which they're controlling, that is Lebanon, is treated as an incursion of Israel. And that's
Right.
how Netanyahu was describing this, it belongs to us now. You try to take it back, it's war.
Right.
And the Iranians obviously do not see it this way, neither does Hezbollah. The Lebanese civilian government is trapped in the middle because they're super duper weak against Hezbollah.
Yes.
And Israeli decimation of Hezbollah forces still hasn't created an opening for the civilian government in Lebanon to try to take over the country again.
Right.
But it
Yep.
would actually be more conductive for all powers to create a situation where the civilian government in Lebanon can actually seize control of its own military assets and then proceed to crush the Hezbollah by coming in from the other way. But that's not how people think. And there's still great incursions into Gaza that's kind of being ignored. The Israelis have fighting two things or three, really. They're doing a Gazan encroachment again, encroaching on Lebanon, and they're doing asymmetrical attacks against Iran, whether it be using security cameras to find targets or bombing strikes themselves. Meanwhile, Ukraine, summer's coming around, and Putin's really got one last big push to try to punch a hole through the Donbass, and the Israelis are doing attrition. I'm sorry, not Israelis, Ukrainians. Ukrainians are doing
Yes.
attrition out there, where they're just making it very painful for the Russians to get out, and they're droning Moscow and fuel refinery plants to try to slow down the Russian war machine and
Yeah.
create terror in Moscow to let the population know that there is a war going on. And guess
And
what?
they can reach Moscow if they want to, yeah.
And we can get to you.
Right.
And the war, they need to do that, Ukrainians. It's distasteful to do terror against civilians, but given exactly how many civilians have been murdered by the Russians at this point, I'm very doubtful that the Ukrainian government has a ton of sympathy. But they don't actually have to kill him. They just have to hit civilian targets
Right.
that shows they're reachable. That you don't you terror does not involve killing people sometimes. You just have to do sufficient destruction in an area that you can say that we can get to you. You don't have
That's
to
right.
kill them. And I saw on Sky News the incompetency of Russians too. They're trying to shoot down a shoot down a drone. And they hit one of the old buildings in an oil refinery.
Oops.
Yeah, because they're like, the military analyst, like, yeah, this wasn't Ukrainian. See the contrail? That contrail came from the ground. That's
Ah.
a defense missile that went the wrong way.
That's an oops.
That's an oops.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, it's never good when your own missile defense system blows up your own buildings.
Right.
So there's a lot of things going on in military conflict, in the Middle East, in Europe. Obviously, there's still lots of stuff going on in Central Africa. You have stuff still happening in Southeast Asia, especially in Myanmar. That conflict is still going on. And then you have like all these elections in Latin America that has adopted American type style politics regarding, Trump type candidates. And you said Venezuela is still standing because this regime, just like Iran, has really not changed. The new president, which I think everyone's now convinced was in on of the U.S. to remove Maduro, has been,
Oh, interesting.
yeah, I think everyone's now convinced of this because she's purged all the Maduro people, 100% purged,
Okay.
cleared out the top end of the military to put her people in, and now has rescinded a lot of the things the U.S. agreed on, including releasing political prisoners. She had a large swath come out early on, and now the U.S. is distracted somewhere else and has stopped doing things like opening another election, has decided to stop releasing political prisoners, has started strangling the population again regarding essential goods and services to suppress population against potential protests and rebellion. So you basically traded one dictator for another dictator, which is the administration's inability to understand that you need to stay on top of people if you want to get what you want. But that means a military incursion that you have U.S. troops staring at them all the time, and this administration is not doing that.
So it says a lot of unsettled areas around the world right now, that's for sure.
Well, he's got Cuba staying out there,
That's right.
which he hasn't even really kind of figured out what he's going to do there yet. And remind folks, does it affect you? Sure, it does. It affects your servicemen and women, that your friends and neighbors that would be put in danger, or for what purposes, I still am not clear. It's your tax dollars at work, federal government, where they're looking to slash things like Meals on Wheels and food subsidies like SNAP. Reduce unemployment benefits by cutting employees. We've talked about in the past, they reduced our employee budget on unemployment benefits by closing in on $20 million thus far. Looking to take you off of Medicaid programs because of the massive amount of reapplications of which the federal government pays for those employees, on which they cut the employee staff again. And we're trying to make up as much as we can at our level. And
And Social
meanwhile,
Security's on the brink now too.
yeah, 70%, I think it's 70% fully funded. Or
Something like
something
that,
like
yeah.
that. Yeah, and I read an article today about one of the defeated senators, Trump defeated senators, that he's trying to set a portion of it into basically borrowed money for private investment. Social Security, if you weren't aware, is completely paid by U.S. Treasuries. It is 100% funded by interest rates on U.S. Treasuries. Unlike the state pension fund and other private pension funds, I'm sorry, public pension funds, actually private ones too, which are invested in the stock market in a balanced portfolio, we're trying to create minimal risk as possible, which we know the market is never zero risk. You can grow a pension fund that way, plus tax dollars, or in a private sector, increase contributions. Like, for example, a union try to close pension liabilities. It's what we do, but the Social Security Fund actually takes zero risk. It is the single biggest owner of U.S. debt, period, is the Social Security Fund. The U.S. government itself holds the most debt because other government agencies actually buy government debt to actually make money on the
Yeah.
interest.
Well, it was created that way on purpose, right? Because it was founded during the Depression. There was no stock market to invest in.
Well, well, the stock market was there. It was just not uninvestable. Let's put it, it was uninvestable. Social Security has a bit, a position of the federal government is that it has to be a zero-risk commodity, which creates U.S. Treasuries. And again, other government agencies also buy U.S. Treasuries. They do this in Japan as well. The Bank of Japan is one of the biggest holders of Japanese debt. It's not unusual for governments to have government agencies hold their own debt. As well as their own central banks, depending on the economic situation they're in. So don't think this is like weird. It isn't.
No.
What's like other countries, there's a lot of fear on potential loss in pension funds in terms of investment in private equities, stock market. They're fearful that if there's a bad crash, it would put at risk your pension money. But if you do a good job like we do here in Massachusetts, your pensioners should be kept fine if you have the right people managing it. And I think all of us are probably thinking the same thing. Do we actually trust the federal government to actually mention manage your pension funds? It's namely Social Security in this case. It turns out that the federal program on a railroad pension is partially invested.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know
Yeah,
that.
it's not 100% stock market, but it is partially invested. There is a railroad pension fund that is separate from Social Security.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Is that because they were taken over by private firms?
It was during the early 70s to address the liability, and it worked. So, One of the accountability mechanisms we have in Massachusetts, if you're a state pensioner, obviously a taxpayer, even because while you pay my salary, some of the liability created by past legislatures is paid by tax dollars. Because you should never use the pension fund as a piggy bank loan to make up state budgets.
Period. Full
Period.
stop.
Yeah, that was done before, and
Oh.
Congress did that with Social Security as well.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It was widely talked about that it was borrowed from. Yes.
Yeah, and so did states. All
Yeah.
states did the same thing as the federal government, and
Yeah.
that's what creates that really creates the biggest part of the liability. So taxpayer, you borrowed taxpayers basically borrowed money against pensioner dollars, which, by the way, we don't have a match, in case you're wondering. There is no matches. It's 100% employee paid for,
Sure.
and you
Yep.
basically borrowed my money for my salary, but you borrowed my money in the end, taxpayers, to pay off things in the budget because they want to raise taxes.
Right.
That's not the entire liability, but is a massive part of the liability that all states have in their pension funds and also in Social Security. So, as I tell folks, if you want, forget about your, like or dislike a government. What fair is fair, is what I like to say. If it was you on the other side, you would like to be treated fairly.
Yeah,
So,
certainly. Yeah.
we'll see how that plays out. Other countries have done things like increase contributions by their citizens. They've changed the retirement age of when you can take the pension. Those are very politically unpopular, very politically unpopular.
Raising the
But
income cap is another possibility.
that's correct. So, we'll see how much intestinal fortitude does the federal government have, because if it continues at its current pace, about 2032, the liability is going to reach a point where it's going to be very difficult to meet payout.
Yes, I'm very aware of that, being that's about the time I hope to retire. So I have to make plans now to make sure I'm able to continue going if that's not there.
Well, we're in the same boat. I know we're a bit different in age, but I'm already in that process of trying to figure out with inflation. I don't pay Social Security, so that's lost to me. Whatever Social Security I paid in my 20s and my teens when I had jobs basically now belongs to you, because I'll never see that money. Because I'm running on a pension system, and as I discussed many times before, have a financial advisor regarding
Oh,
private,
yeah.
personal money put into Roths and other things to address, when I turn age 62, 63. And I believe an IRAs and 401ks and 457s and 403bs have to be 70. The current one, I think 73 is mandatory withdrawal.
Pretty sure that's right.
So Roth IRA does not have a mandatory withdrawal.
No, that's taxes already paid on that, so you can do whatever you want with that.
Yeah. So, again, this is I'm not that old, but it doesn't hurt to, have a 20-year plan moving forward, trying to figure out, what quality of life you'll have when to have 20 years from today.
Absolutely. So why aren't gas prices coming down, Jackie?
I don't know. It has come down a bit. I mean,
Some,
it's under $4. Okay, that's remarkable in itself right now. And the price of oil is kind of fluctuating right around $70, but that could spike at any moment. I think a lot a part again we like last year during the Ukraine war. I'm sorry, not last year, almost 4 years now, the Ukraine war, and you got the COVID shocks. Even before that, during the early 2000s and in the 2010s, you had consumption oil go up because of industrialized nations being fully formed economies, similar to the West. You've had all these supply and demand issues. I'm going to tell you my big suspicion is because they're afraid of another price shock.
Makes
That's
sense, I
what.
guess, because things are still tenuous at best.
Agreed. And I think that's what's good. It's driving its lack of certainty. So, if they drop it down to like 350, for example, from 378 or 388, they drop it down in 1 week. And there's a price shock the week after, because this is all based on futures, not today. That is the problem. And the futures market is showing a decline, but I don't think the industry believes the futures market. And the futures market is what's supposed to create stability on fuel prices. So you look at what people in the future are basically taking options, betting on
Yes.
price should be in the future, dictates how you should behave today. And I don't think there's a lot of faith in private sector businesses regarding the futures market right now.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how long it takes if it does start to, permanently come down.
But it's going to be a break point, right? The supply shock on inflation is a delayed effect. The administration, and it's not just this president, all presidents look to the today number or the most recent month number to try to convince you that there is no such thing as inflation. You do have a delay. The question is if it's a delay hitting all simultaneously, or is it going to be like a smooth go through. So if it's a smooth go through, your price shocks will be very gradual, and you kind of see it move, but it won't be like a steepening curve up. In politics, as you can imagine, with the public, your biggest fear is spikes, because you see
Especially in an
money,
election year.
especially in election year. You rather
Yeah.
see a gradual movement up and down, more like
Right.
a curve on a long roller coaster. To try to smooth out the bumps in the long run, as opposed to jet massive spikes up and down, which
Right.
creates consumer and business uncertainty of what the price structure should be. And you still got
Yeah.
the tariffs coming back again, issuing a new set of tariffs, which create one-time spikes until you accept these tariffs as the norm. And food prices aren't, agricultural food prices really aren't going to hit you until October. September, October is when you feel those agricultural food prices on a global level. You may not see gas and natural gas as well as fuel and jet fuel prices stabilize in the fall. And you got airlines are continuing to increase their fares in the second half of this year because of lack of surety regarding the availability of jet fuel.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Fed is not confident that inflation is in check. They're talking raising interest rates.
Last month's CPI was 4.2%. I've actually did not look at the PCE today, which should be significantly lower because it strips out food and fuel, which are very volatile. So generally, the PCE should be in the threes, should be in the low three zone. But because 4.2% has food and energy prices, which is very volatile, it should be significantly higher than the PCE. So. The Federal Reserve is going to be interesting to watch because usually they speak on a similar voices over the last year, and Chair Walsh may find himself in a situation where he's going to get more dissenting opinions regarding raising rates to try to address inflation, particularly once we close in October.
Yes.
And as I said before, a lot of these shocks may not appear to September, October, right before Election Day.
Yes, very, very soon before. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and this is a political show. We
Yes.
talked about. So,
Yes.
I mean, you guys can probably figure out by raw common sense what will happen if interest rates go up right before Election Day
Right.
by a quarter point. The stock market takes a bit of a bump down as a result, and you're looking at your price of tomatoes going up significantly at the same time. And you might see a PCE of like 3.7. It could have a CPI of like 4.7.
Yeah.
Perhaps. And then, the news will say the sky is falling and it'll create a negative media attitude among voters, which would take it out on whomever's at the polls. So, and the president's going to lose his mind and will start demanding things from Walsh, but the board makes the decision, not just the chair.
That's right. That's right. And right now he's like trying to herd cats because they're out there saying their own things.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I think the misconception that the president, as well as I think the media as well, on the Federal Reserve Board, is that they're under some false impression is whatever the chair wants, the chair gets. That is not true.
Right. No, it never has been. Exactly. Yeah, it's a very independent board on design, by design.
Yeah, and they need to reach a consensus vote to get the majority in what they're going to do next. And they're looking at the same data. And these folks are pretty good at their job. They've all been banking industry analysts, economists, folks for decades. So they're not
Yes.
stupid people. But they're all working on the same data sets, doing no analysis, trying to figure out what the future may look like. And
Right.
they may have different opinions on what it is based on their experiences in past economies. And Walsh is an experienced Federal Reserve person himself, and is very competent, despite what people say. He is actually very competent. However, he may not have the votes on the board on what he wants to do, and may find himself in a situation he's a compromise with the membership. And the chair would never want to go on the wrong side of the vote. So if he finds himself on the losing side of the vote, he ain't gonna call the vote.
That's right. And he probably won't last in that position too long either.
A chair never loses a vote.
Just ask the Speaker of the
Ask a chairman of a committee.
House. Oh, or that, as you know yourself, yeah.
As I know myself, you do not call the vote if you're going to lose. That makes no sense. That forces you to reach a compromise so you can't get the votes to win. And that's how this life works. It's about compromise and negotiation, respect of other folks' opinions to try to figure out how you can move forward together.
Respect. You just said the key word, respect. That's right.
And that's a big part of what I do at the State House. Again, I'm an old staffer, folks. I still believe in these old-fashioned protocols I was taught with, and I still maintain a high degree of mentality that it doesn't matter how you got elected. Everyone got elected, and you deserve the respect as an office holder. I don't agree with you whatsoever, but you deserve the respect as an office holder.
Yeah, it's the Tip O'Neill School of Politics, right?
I am very old-fashioned. Was
Yeah.
brought up. Whether you agree or disagree with me, well, you can talk about that, but that's what I was brought up.
What's going on in your committee, by the way, these days?
Not too much. We held a public hearing actually yesterday, and we have the way the quirky rules have been set up by the House and Senate leadership teams. We actually heard a Senate version of the bill. We already heard in the House. In the previous rule system, if your bill has been heard once, you don't have to hear the same issue twice. So, for example, not example, reality, we had a bill on a veterinary, virtual veterinarian, which virtual veterinarians, that's what it sounds like. We sent the bill to study order in the House because we think we weren't ready to do something like this. But a Senate bill appeared well after the House took action on it. But because of the way the rules are set up, it still needed to be heard. So we heard the same testimony twice,
Oh, I see.
which I found fascinating because I had to remind the membership and the public, we've already been here before in my statements on the committee. And then we have some stuff regarding, bill on informing consumers about shelf life of internet-based support, software updates.
Interesting.
So, for example, smart fridges have software updates.
Oh, okay, sure.
How long will your appliance receive software-based support?
Oh, you have to, I didn't realize that was had to be regulated.
It doesn't yet. This is a huge question mark I don't have an answer for either. So
Well, it's interesting though. It's interesting because devices could be outdated before their time.
well, that's a good question. It's hard to predict. So if you go and provide a guarantee of 2 years of software support, you have to honor 2 years. However, it could be more than 2 years of support. And it's largely based on usage. If once companies see a hardware out of circulation, reach a certain percentage that doesn't exist in terms of actual usage, there's no need for software support.
No, because it's costing them money, right?
I'll give you the simplest example of this. Nintendo Wii systems, Nintendo Switch 1, and Nintendo Switch 2. When the Wii came out, it was the simply most popular system bought, actually. Look up the statistics, it's easy. And for a very long time, they had a lot of software support. Then the Switch 1 came out. And eventually, over the course of 2 years, Nintendo figured out that people really had migrated from the Wii onto Switch 1 and proceeded to discontinue supporting the system and the cloud system for the Wii system. It works, but it doesn't have any internet support anymore.
I understand.
The Switch 2 was speculated forever and finally came out last summer, and that was over 7 years. So Nintendo itself weren't sure on development how long it would take, and given the fact hardware technology keeps evolving every single year, what would the Switch 2 look like? So if I was saying on the Switch 1, I would provide you 3 years support on internet software, but you don't see a Switch 2 for 7 years, there's a bit of a
What do you
problem.
do for those 4 years?
That's correct. And And at some point, Switch 1 will lose support, probably someplace in the next 3 years, once it's clear to Nintendo they've hit a critical mass of Switch 2 users, where Switch 1 will be phased out as a device for internet-based support.
Oh, very interesting. These are things I never would have thought of, Jackie. But you have to, because
Things I have to learn about.
these are things you have to learn about. Oh, it must make your job very interesting, because it's a kind of never stop learning, right?
Yeah, this is one of the fun committees to have if you really put the work into it, is because it gets such a diverse set of issues. And as we talked about in the past, I do have oversight of alcohol quota licensing in cities and towns. And we just did a poll yesterday out to membership, moving forward again on some bills to allow cities and towns to get more licenses on alcohol. And some towns or cities who are unable to issue all the licenses pursuant to deadlines that we created in these bills. We created deadlines and issuance because I discovered certain communities did not issue any licenses, which defeats the point of getting a bill done.
That's right.
It's also very disrespectful to your legislative delegation and the legislature if you ask for something you never use, by the way. It's a waste of my time and your legislative delegation time to actually get something you never utilize, which is why I put deadlines on usage. COVID created a circumstance none of us predicted, which still today, cities and towns are looking for extensions in usage on expiration dates that were created during the COVID period.
Because it was successful.
Yeah, and some development on some communities were delayed, up to 5+ years because of the COVID situation. So there is a lasting effect still from the COVID shutdown, but also the price structure and inflation. As you may remember, lumber was out of control in 2021. Inflation has forced some communities to stop development because they exceeded their budgets, and revisit the issue at a future date, which happens to be today sometimes.
Oh, interesting. Actually, I think it slowed down the new police station here in Quincy for a while.
Because the cost of materials were out of control. So give you a sense of kind of behind the veil, as we like to do on the show, about some of the things I do. It is not that straightforward and requires a lot of education, beyond the city of Quincy guys, that I have to learn about other communities and how they operate and what the circumstances are that they need certain changes to the law to address the current situation locally. And I truly believe on these situations that not just the committee wants accountability, but the legislative delegations that represent those committees should have accountability as well.
Certainly, absolutely, Make sure everything's running efficiently as possible.
It's their name on the bill. So if you're the legislator that has the name on the bill, you should have some accountability from the municipality. Like, what are you doing? Because my name's on the hook, not yours.
That's right. What's the story here? What are you doing this for?
Yeah, just my thought in the matter. If my name was on something, I would like to think I would like to know what's going on. But everybody does the things their own way, so I can't.
That's
I
right.
don't like to be overly critical.
You can only speak for yourself. That's right. I understand. Anything coming up in the district we should know about?
Well, congratulations to the scholarship winners at the Elks last night. I'm sorry I could not make it out there. I had a friend's retirement party from the AG's office. My good friend Joe Rogers, who after 33 years working representing ratepayers against utility companies, has finally retired. We talked about this many times with Joe. Like, when are you going to retire? And if you're not aware, Joe Rogers and stepfather Sean Collier.
Oh, okay. Sure. The MIT police officer was killed during the marathon bombings.
Yeah, so Joe's a good friend of mine. So, congratulate Joe on service, and you can work more time on his stepson's foundation, the Sean Collier Foundation, which does a lot of work, including helping build handicap accessible playgrounds. So, but also hope he has some free time and gets to enjoy life. And I saw him, and he lost a lot of weight. He looks in great health, and I would like to see him even in better health moving forward. So then we have obviously Jolly 4th is rolling around next week. So it'll be in Adams Shore, Germantown, and Marymount. Quincy Pride is this Saturday, Marymount Park. If people have time to stop in. There is a Friends of Wollaston Beach annual meeting, I believe, coming up on Sunday. I actually have a wake coming up. I have a friend who's daughter died at the age of, I believe, 42. I actually have to hit a funeral next week as well. I know a very old friend, actually, known him 27 years.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. It's also hard to get to everybody's events, as you know, whether it be a passing of an individual as well as celebratory events. It's hard to catch them all. And of course, I don't want to bring my personal life into this too much, but I'm still doing a lot of post-mortem things regarding my mom, which I'm sure people here have done listening to this and things you didn't realize was there. So I've been I have a personal deadline of getting certain things done, because I just don't want certain things to linger.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. It's a process you have to go through for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So
Reach out to you, of course, Jackie.
yeah, room 42 at the State House. We're there, room 42, 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. I do not control the phone chain. I get more than one person telling me about this. So be patient and wait if the person in front desk does not pick up. We have tackychan.org as a resource page, as well as State Representative Tacky Chan with a corresponding Instagram page. We do have malegislature.gov. Please make an account, and you can follow your favorite public policies, bills, public hearings, watching formal and informal sessions. You can do this on your own. If you need help on finding something, we're always very helpful to you on that. We obviously have a Joe here with me at QATV at QATV.org. If you want to send an email in, Joe will be happy to see it and see what other topics you'd like to talk about. Again, it doesn't have to be about politics, government, or public policy. You want to talk about something like how I make lamb? I mean, I don't care. You want to talk about something different that isn't this. We're very happy
That's
to.
okay too. Yeah,
It's
exactly.
actually okay.
Yeah.
Very happy to do
Still
that.
waiting
And
for the first one.
I know somebody's got to send Joe an email with a special request conversation. Again, it doesn't have to be about politics. We're happy to talk about other things that you may be interested in.
Sure.
And
We might
then,
not know anything about it, but we'll talk about
well,
it.
I think you would know before I would know because you see the email first.
That's true. I could do a little research.
You can do your homework before I just get surprised when you show up. As we
That's
know,
it.
this
These
is
are not scripted,
unscripted.
folks. This is totally
Yeah, this is
unplugged.
totally unplugged. So, I mean, Joe, you can write stuff to Joe and just spring it on me. I'll be floating a little more into the public, but again, I have a lot of personal life stuff I'm still trying to work through.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Always good to catch up, Techie. Appreciate it.
Well, good to see you, Joe. Catch you in a week's time.